Welcome to Someone Should Make This, a show where we do the hard part of coming up with great video game ideas and offer them up to the world. My name is Danish.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Matt, and I know what a cold open is. But Danish doesn't. Check out that last
episode.
I mean,
I know what a cold open is. I just didn't want to do a cold open. I wanted to do my modified version of a cold open, which is a warm
which
open.
Which is not a cold open.
It's not a cold open, really. So, Matt.
What up?
You get that 3080?
Okay, there's a story.
There's a fucking
oh, man.
Story.
Dramatic
here.
Pause that was filled with so much pain.
We might. Here's the thing. Me and Jeff both might have a 3080 on the way. We've been sitting in a Twitch channel watching The Matrix go by to try to figure out when a 3080 is going to be. Should we call out that Twitch channel? Like, it feels like it might have helped. No, we'll do it next week if we get our 3080.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But we were sitting in a Twitch channel. The whole point of it is to like, it's just constantly scrolling by stock notifications, like in stock or out of stock notifications for like all the different websites that sell 3080s. The new NVIDIA graphics card 30 series, that if you care about graphics cards is a very exciting time.
But also a frustrating time as we've chronicled.
Yes.
Past.
Very, very frustrating time. Rumor pops up on, what was it, Friday sometime?
I think it was Friday.
Yeah. Like, oh shit, Best Buy is going to have a new stock. I just heard it on the deep webs or whatever. You know, like people in the chat just like saying stuff. And
yeah, there was a drop at noon. There was supposed to be a drop at noon, right? On Friday.
That's what they said. It's like Rumor House 1997. Mm-hmm. But that's good enough for me. So I put aside all my plans. I didn't eat lunch, and I just stared at Best Buy and refreshed over and over again, and nothing happened. Then everybody was like, "Oh my God, was that the drop? Was it so fast that like bots got it?" Because that's a big problem right now. Like people with bots are just like scooping them up before a human being can possibly buy them, and like nobody saw it go on sale. Then everybody just figured it was so fast. Like the bots got it so fast that you couldn't even see it go on sale. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, like, I don't know, like 10, no, not even, no, it was like 45 minutes later.
I think it was even later than that. Shortly after 1 p.m., Matt, you messaged me in Discord and said, almost had it in my cart.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what?
No, yeah. So they went up all of a sudden, super way later than the rumor said, but still they went up. Got one in my cart, and before I like, and I'm on the app with the Apple Pay like ready to go on the fucking Best Buy app, which is like, who the fuck has a Best Buy app?
And the app is horrible.
So I'm like, literally, I see this thing go for sale. I'm like, double click the thing for Apple Pay. This item's out of stock, and I was like, gee, like it was in my cart. Like that's how fast it supposedly went. Everybody's really sad, and then just on a whim, I refreshed again, and I did like message Jeff in the meantime. I refreshed again and they were back again. I was like, well, that's gotta be a bug. So I'm like just sitting there like, well, I'm not going to like let it go though. I'm going to like keep trying. And I'm like going, and it's like, it's going between in stock, out of stock. And I'm just like, I'm going to keep going as long as this supposed bug is happening. And, eventually it actually like went through and it said I got a card, and I was like, oh, I don't want to believe this is true. But I did tell Jeff, I was like, it says I got a card. And Jeff eventually also said you got a card.
Yeah.
And you seemed very excited, and I wanted to be like, all right, Jeff, here's the thing.
You seem very excited.
I've had...
You guys are both, like, calming each other
Everybody
down.
Relax,
and
relax,
each other
we're
up
not freaking
and,
out.
Well, I mean, because... So,
did you guys get an email or anything, like
well,
a confirmation?
Well, before we get to that, I talked about this before. I'm just tired of this. And so after the no drop at noon, I actually went to bed, and I was just like, I just gotta lie down. I didn't sleep all the night before because of a 2 a.m. drop that never happened, but
oh,
did
yeah,
happen.
Amazing.
But it was, and so I was exhausted, and I'm laying down, and then Matt sends me this first text, and I'm just like, well, wait a minute, it's like an hour late. And I open up my Best Buy app, and sure enough, there are three different graphics cards in stock, and the Best Buy app will not let me purchase them. So I run to my office and I unlock my computer because I'd given up for the day. And around this time, Matt, you're going through. And so I'm refreshing the page. And then just like Matt, it went through. And we both got confirmation emails.
We both got emails. But here's the thing. I am not going to believe that this is true until at least I get like a shipping number or something.
Right.
And so I still don't have a shipping number, and this was 3 days ago, and I don't think Jeff does either, so who knows what's going on.
Good stuff. I have been playing Star Renegades.
What is Star Renegades? I've heard
this game is awesome. Okay, so it's on PC. It's available on the Xbox Game Pass PC, not the console. I just got a new laptop, so I can finally use it, and I've been downloading the Game Pass PC games. Star Renegades, it's basically an RPG roguelike, kind of. It's a little, kind of the way Enter the Breach is. It's okay. Like the battles are turn-based RPGs, just like old school, you know, JRPG style. Mm-hmm. It's a sci-fi setting with a, it's actually a pretty cool narrative that's I was actually drawn into. Like I was watching the opening cutscene has no dialogue. It's all told through visuals. And I thought, oh, this is actually kind of cool. I like the way they're doing this. And then once the game starts, there's like dialogue and back and forth. And I mean, it's a simple story, but I actually got into it. So the big hook of this game, though, the thing that I love is the actual fight mechanics of the turn-based RPG. The one thing that traditionally you take your turns and then the opponent takes their turns hitting back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then some of the more modern ones do like cooldowns on your characters. So it's just like, okay, I hit a button and now I cool down. Maybe some games have like the stronger attack you are, the more cooldown you have. So there's a little bit of like strategy there. And then there's the more recent ones like a, what do you call it? Slay the Spire, where the big advancement was it tells you exactly the moves the enemies are going to do. And so that you can dodge them or block or power through or counter them in some way. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really fun. This game combines like everything. It's the ultimate mashup game. And the beauty of it is this timeline at the top of the screen where it's like shows you where in the timeline of the order of events you are and the enemy is. So I'm first, my partner second, the enemy's third. Okay, and that's, and the timeline goes through, and that's gonna, it's almost like John Wick Hex, actually. And then as you, the playhead hits you, that's when you can do your move. Now, what's awesome about this is that every move you do, it pushes you along the timeline for your next move. Mm-hmm. And so if you do quick attacks, it pushes you a little bit, and then next round, you're still first. The genius part is you can do moves that push the enemy back, like they stagger him, essentially. It's almost like a fighting game in slow motion. So if I know one of my moves is going to stagger him, that's going to push him back further, so now that my second character can do a big wind-up move, because he's not going to, the playhead's not going to hit that before the second player goes. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, but
it does. This constant balance of like staggering, defending, like doing quick attacks, you know, heavy attacks, but it's all this management of like, what's the order of operations? I'm constantly changing the order of operations. And if you keep pushing him back past the timeline, that's like a break or like a crit, you know, and that's like staggers him for like a longer period of time. So sometimes the strategy is like, okay, I'm just going to do all these attacks that maybe don't do a lot of damage, but are going to push him further and further back down the timeline. And then once he reaches the end of it, that's like a big bonus and stuff. It's a genius system of combat. And yeah, I'm totally digging this game. It's awesome.
That reminds me of a game. I've been trying to like rack my brains for what game it is. It might've been like Heroes of Might and Magic had its.
Is it Has Been Heroes? Cause they had a similar timeline thing, because it's all like left to right. I think in Has Been Heroes you're trying to get like a prince or princess to school or something, and you have these heroes, and really similar timeline management where like you're trying to combo through your roster against the enemy, like by mixing and matching attacks and stuff.
The other game I've heard of, I haven't played it, it's called Grandia 2, I think, does something like this. But anyway, also very cool art style. It's like that one Switch game that came out, Octopath Traveler. It's a little bit like that, mm-hmm. where it's like, it's pixel art, but done in a 3D world with like shadows and stuff. It's like, it's a weird effect. It's very, very cool when like, you're looking at the screen that looks like an 8-bit screen, and then it has some parallax as you're walking around, but then suddenly like this, you know, ship crashes, and you see it like lighting up the environment and casting like shadows. It's like, whoa, I just kind of didn't see that coming, because like you never would expect that in an 8-bit game, you know, or a 16-bit game.
Is it voxel art then?
I don't know if it's actually voxel.
It's still flat. It's not voxel art. I mean, it's possible that there's voxel shadow casters. Like maybe the actual sprites are pixels, but then hidden is a voxel version so that when it hits it, it casts shadows accurately. Hmm. That's possible. I'm just speculating.
Yeah.
But anyway, this game is awesome. You guys got to play Star Renegades. You can get it on PC.
I feel like I'm down for an RPG right now. It's been a while.
Well, I don't want to get into it, but I'm still playing Genshin Impact, and I think I've decided I like it.
Oh, sorry. Before you get into that, one more thing about Star Renegades. Like I said, it's the ultimate mashup game. The other thing it mashes into it is the nemesis system, where it keeps track of like enemies.
That's
and you
cool.
have this big sort of like castle where you see all of them, and they're like, oh, it's the whole thing. But like, I remember when that kind of system was introduced, everyone's like, oh, this is so cool, I can't wait for every game to rip it off. Nobody did.
Yeah, I feel like there's been like two other games that have done something similar.
Yeah, it's not many. So this one has that, and it's very cool too. So anyway, sorry,
awesome.
Jeff. Genshin Impact.
I mean, I don't want to get too much into it, because I feel like I kind of said what I needed to say last time, but I just let the record show I'm still playing it every day. And,
that's cool. I think that I'm going to try it.
It's free. It's free.
Like, yeah.
I'm
that
not gonna
is
try
the
it.
Biggest thing for me was that I downloaded it day one because it was free, and I'm still playing because it's
I'm not going to try it because it scares me.
There's a
I'm
lot of
I'm going to
play
it for 2 hours and give up.
Well, I mean, you know, I think you would get the play experience in 2 hours, but you would also, I think you wouldn't get past the intimidation in 2 hours, because there are so many systems. And now that I've played for a week and a half, or however long it's been, I like understand those systems, and I've found how to navigate them in a fun way. And so that's kind of where I'm at, where like I've just crested the intimidation.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it looks cool. I'm definitely, there's no reason not to try it. So I'm just going to try it. Yeah. And at the very least, it'll just kind of give me, you know, appreciation. Maybe it'll give me some ideas for this show.
Yeah, and it's a PC and console, so it's everywhere.
Here's the thing. If I jump in there and I get into it, we're like a couple weeks out from the new Destiny expansion, and I know that's going to take my life over.
I was thinking about that today.
I can't get invested in something else and then just to... Like, it's like I can't have a child knowing that I've already got a child that's coming back from college soon.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
You know what I mean? Because I only have enough room for one thing to love in my life.
That's amazing.
You know, parents won't say that, and Danish, I know you can't say that, but that's 100% how it is.
Yeah,
it's,
really,
you
oh.
love one of them, and the other ones are just
Jason's
whatever.
Coming back from college. You can't have another kid.
there was some news article. I can't remember the game, but it was something like, you know, so-and-so game is not, you know, living up to expectations. It's like a, you know.
It was probably Avengers.
It might have been Avengers. And I remember it's like there was one kind of comment on that. Like, yeah, maybe we can't play 15 fucking lifestyle games.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, no, that's a good fucking point. I kind of want to leave that for our after party, because that's a big conversation.
Yeah, we can get into that later. Actually, so this week on our subreddit, which is someone should make this, r/someone should make this.
How does Reddit work, Jeff?
we had some listener pitches. There's a thread on there called Listener Pitches for people to add, and our good friend and follower fan Gablaster posted a couple.
And Jordan Goddard is active on the Reddit as well, and a former guest. So check it out. It's very cool.
Yeah. So
do you want to who's gonna read?
Yeah,
this?
Not
I
me
because
right now I can
haven't heard these yet.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So, Danish, I know you read them because I can see a comment on here. But the first one, I love this pitch because it changes from the first sentence to the last sentence. but basically, Jablaster was playing Star Wars Squadrons in VR, and they were thinking about Mario Kart Live, and they were thinking about how cool it would be to do Mario Kart Live, but on a Star Wars Squadron scale. So like years in the future, we've colonized the moon and there are drone races on the moon like F-Zero style that you could control from Earth and do races on the moon with these cool hovercraft.
Wait, are these real hovercraft on the moon?
Yeah.
Fuck, wait, what? I can't wait for that.
Yeah, or in low space orbit.
So in real life, Dan, in real life, there's like orbs floating.
Drone in your living room.
Drones, no, yeah, on the moon.
On the moon.
Right?
In real life.
In real life, there are drones on the moon, and they were saying like maybe people pay to take your turn piloting it. So there's like there are just on the moon, it's like a go-kart track, like in an amusement park, and you just log in and you queue up and then you control one of these hovercraft on the moon.
I see. I actually misread this a little bit. In fact, I think that's where he started, and then that's when the thing evolved.
No, here's the thing. Me and G-Blast are on the same fucking page. Because long ago, when Danish approached me and said, I'm putting a team together, we're going to do a podcast, I said, hell yeah. And he was like, we're going to do game ideas. And I was like, hell yeah, I got millions of those. And then we started doing it. And it turns out we have to do real ideas. And I just wanted to do silly, goofy ideas the whole time. And I think maybe G-Blaster, if you want to get in on this, maybe we do our own side podcast where we do fun ideas.
Anyway.
Bye, guys.
I'm being ousted live.
So the second idea is also from G-Blaster. And this one,
before you get to that.
Sorry.
I mean, even the first iteration of that idea of just, hey, Mario Kart Live AR drone racing, that's awesome. Drone racing is a thing. It is popular.
The DRL, the Drone Racing League, and there are cameras on the drones, and they do exactly what he's saying, where they put on like a VR headset, essentially, and they race... Yeah. You know, little four propeller drones in real time, and they're fucking fast. Like, I don't know how they can do this because
they're not in space, so fuck it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so imagine if you laid AR on top of that, there's no reason why it wouldn't feel like Squadrons. It would be just amazing. I commented it here, but there was a fun tested video from like 5 years ago where they're like, okay, drone racing is cool, but what if drone racing plus bridge crew? And so they made a co-op drone where they like hacked together a controller where like three people were controlling like three different axes of movement.
This just reminded me of something, but sorry, go on.
Yeah, they had to like basically work together and then they set up an obstacle course with rings and stuff. So
that's awesome.
Check out the Reddit. I linked that video in there.
I had an idea and I almost want this to count as my game idea because it's so good, but... It's also really bad, and I just want to like say it really fast.
Yep.
Imagine a VR game where you and another player's head movements are either locked or sort of like rubber banded together a little bit with like a little bit of give, and the entire point of the game is to synchronize your movements with the other player, like... I'm just gonna say it like Pacific Rim, where you have to get into the drift together and like get all your moves synchronized for some reason.
Well, there is a game that does that. You guys probably don't remember. Trackmania has a multiplayer, a co-op racing mode where it averages your analog inputs of your car.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that. I think last year. Sometime.
Yeah.
But I want VR where it's like literally, if you drag your head away from mine, I get motion sick and die immediately.
Oh, God.
Right? So we like there's high stakes to sync our faces up.
Wait, hold on. What if you guys are in like this sort of power loader suit?
Yes.
And my head move actually like activates servos and moves your head. And we're fighting for physical control.
Wait, your head movement moves my head.
So like same thing you're talking about, but just with a wrapper.
No, I'm talking about in real life, like physically.
Oh, God. No. You could break my neck.
Yeah, yes. That's not a good idea. Remember when Sam Rockwell was trying to do that in the Marvel movies and the guy twisted in half?
Oh, yeah.
No, I blocked that movie.
So they showed this really quick scene of I'm just like, I don't know why I'm so invested in this scene. It stuck with me. And like,
it's a crazy scene.
They're like testing out this giant exosuit and they're like, okay, turn your head. And the whole like upper body just snaps 180 degrees and you hear the guy screaming.
Yeah.
But
then Sam Rockwell's like, he lived.
I think that's the guy that they're talking about at the beginning of, Doctor Strange when he said, he has to do spine surgery on somebody that was testing military equipment.
Oh, whoa. I didn't even put that together.
I haven't seen anybody put this shit together. I feel
Holy
like I'm the
shit.
Only one that knows.
That's good.
Exclusive on the podcast. Yeah. That's amazing.
So Benedict Cumberbatch will be on next week to talk about this.
That's awesome. Jeff, what's the other idea we got here?
Yeah. And then I'm spinning, no pun intended, from this revelation we've had. But the second idea actually feels like something, Dennis, you would have pitched, because it's taking the mapping tech of Microsoft Flight Simulator and it's using it in a kind of like a environmentalist minded strand game where you play as a researcher on Antarctica mapping the ice sheet and glaciers melting and like breaking up. So the way that G-Blaster describes it is players playing on a real-time updated terrain of Antarctica, noticing every ice shelf that breaks off as they work as a community to shuffle resources from expedition camp to expedition camp. As a strand game, trying to save Antarctica. Yeah,
pretty cool.
I need games that use real world like maps and stuff to make entertainment so that I can learn about our
our like planet. GeoGuessr was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Also on the subreddit there was a great GeoGuessr speed run video that was posted. Yeah. Which is pretty funny. Let's move on. Actually, one thing I want to say is about this kind of mapping idea. One thing that it's not an original idea for me. A lot of people have been saying it and they kind of start doing it is basically like games like, you know, GTA 5 or like Assassin's Creed have these intricate like modeled out worlds, mm-hmm. like these open worlds. And, you know, after Origins, Assassin's Creed turned a big corner in making the game like awesome. But before that, like, the game wasn't really that great. It was, like, an amazing world and kind of an okay game. And so it's like, well, why don't you just offer this world up to the world and have them design games in it, you know? And so, like, you can make a zombie game, you can make a racer, and you're just using the Assassin's Creed or GTA world.
So what's interesting about that is at least Odyssey has, like, a quest editor. Saying. And yeah. And if they expanded that to include, I guess, more genres to get, like, you know, like a zombie horde mode or something. Or
exactly. Yeah, that's what I was saying. They kind of started inching toward that. It was very cool. And I haven't had a chance to jump into that yet. But yeah, I'm really happy they're doing stuff like that and the museum mode and things like that.
Yeah, museum mode is a big one.
So yeah, that's great. I want to see more of that. Basically, I want like Dreams plus Assassin's Creed.
I mean, it's called mods.
Yeah.
Like, but people have been making mods forever.
But Danish, I think what you're touching on is, and I'm going to zoom this out to the game industry real quick. You spend as a developer between 2 and 6, well, sometimes 8 years building out a world like this, and then you get one game in it. And yeah, it sucks to like see stuff reused. But well, I know now it's like games of service and stuff. But there's a certain element of sense to saying like, okay, Assassin's Creed Odyssey is enormous, plus the DLC, you have like Elysium and Atlantis and all this other shit going on. Like, why not reuse that in a completely different game? And now you have this beautifully rendered Greece that you can play in.
They actually, Ubisoft did that with Far Cry 3 and Far Cry Primal. Do you remember this? It was kind of like scandalous.
The map up or something, right?
Yeah, you can overlay the two maps on top of each other.
I don't want to talk too much shit about that because I don't know the specific details.
I don't know either. But I just
remember internet people being mad.
Yeah, that's my point. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that people got mad, and that's stupid because people get mad about everything.
You know what's funny about that? No one gets mad about someone using Quixel Megascans data because it looks so fucking good. No one's like, oh, they're just reusing assets from the world.
Oh, they'll get mad about that eventually, though. I guarantee you, they'll get mad about it. Once some motherfucker walks into one game and sees a rock, and then sees that same rock in a different game, they're gonna be like, "Lazy devs, what the fuck?"
Well, I've been thinking about that in relation to Death Stranding, our favorite game in the world, because
it's so good.
No one else is gonna be able to do Iceland geography again without it being like, "Oh, that's Death Stranding." You know what I mean? Like,
oh, people think
we'll see
Stranding
how
is like,
exactly, because they use photogrammetry. Like, I mean, Death Stranding is beyond beautiful, but they almost like cornered the market on like a volcanic landscape.
We'll see how Hellblade 2 handles it.
Oh, yeah, because actually, that's a great point, because That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right. Well, we've gone on long enough, and I have a game idea that I promised the fans.
Matt, you did promise. What was the tease for that?
RPM. Do you guys have any guesses for what it is?
It's a joke on rotations per minute.
It is.
It's going to be something completely different, like, I don't know.
Should I
recycling or something?
Here's the thing. I stand at a crossroads where if I go left, I just reveal right now what the game is, and you go, oh, or I try to walk you through my thought process, and you figure it out on your own.
Let's do that.
I like the thought process, but real quick, I'm pretty sure RPM stands for really Post Malone.
You got it, Jeff. I was like, how could you be Post Malone, but like really Post Malone? Find out next week on Someone Should Make This. No, that's not it at all. Okay. Well, can you guys think of any other PM games?
There's Bullets Per Minute, which just came out.
Interesting thought. Can you expand that into RPM in any way?
So if Bullets Per Minute is about guns, RPM must be like
robots.
Like
robots.
Oh, robots per minute.
Maybe we got a new idea.
Robots, racers per minute, which actually kind of fits with the car thing, but maybe that's not enough of a stretch.
Danish, you got anything real quick before I pull the rug out from under both of you?
No, go for it.
Well, Jeff mostly got it. It's rounds per minute.
Okay.
So the idea here is that you are, there's a car outside. What a good, I don't know if you guys hear that. Did you hear the car go by?
No.
It was like a muscle car went by right when I started talking about my game about cars. I saw beats per minute and I was like, oh, that's cool. Beats per minute, BPM, but it's bullets per minute. There's a little like duality in the naming there. And I was like, there's another per minute called revolutions per minute in cars. But what if it was rounds per minute, which is the same as bullets? Rounds are bullets.
That's a good point.
So I'm thinking,
real original.
Yeah. I'm thinking car combat game where the higher the RPMs are in your engine, the more bullets you're spewing out the front of your car.
Oh shit. That's a good idea.
Yeah. And at first I was like, oh, that's a funny idea, and that's about as far as I can get into it. But then I started thinking about like shifting cars and how like when your car's going slow and you're in first gear, like your RPM is sort of tangentially related to how fast you're going, right? So once you get into the high RPMs in first gear, you need to shift to second gear. Your RPMs drop back down because of the new like gearing ratios, then you build your RPMs back up. So your speed is like kind of constantly going up, but depending what gear you're in, that's going to affect
that's pretty cool.
Your bullets, right?
Oh, I can already see how this could like play into loadouts and stuff where each gear is a different weapon.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if you're fighting a boss. I don't know if this is against other players. Like this is basically just the mechanic, but like if I'm going like...
Mechanic.
mechanic. If I'm going like, you know, 150 miles an hour and I'm in like the top gear, but I'm not like pegging it out because the car just doesn't have the power to go that fast. And I need to like, you know, maybe I'm shooting like, I don't know. It's hard to think of like bullets per minute because a minute is such a long frame of time. But you know, maybe the car's just like bop, 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 firing bullets. But I can quickly downshift to the gear below to like knock the RPMs way up and it would be like, but it's also going to start slowing my car down.
That's cool.
So that is the mechanic that I'm working with, the mechanic that I want to...
Okay, so I have one issue. You could either do car combat like Twisted Metal where you're in an arena and it's open, or you can do car combat kind of like Road Rash where you're all driving in the same direction.
Okay.
And I kind of feel like that has to be the way to do it, because if you're going really fast in an open world, like it's going to be... I don't know. You're just going to fly past people or something.
Well, so let me throw something else in here. I wholeheartedly agree that it should be something like Road Rash where everyone's kind of moving together. But what if there was an element kind of like Rez where there are environmental things coming in along with, I'm assuming there's music tracks and stuff to this because why wouldn't there be?
I don't know how you would like match that up.
I don't think you can necessarily.
So beats per minute is definitely a play on the BPM, right?
Yeah.
And I don't have it. There's no like music hook in my naming. So there doesn't have to be a music hook in the game.
Okay. Because RPM could also be rhythm per minute, which doesn't make any sense.
Oh, my rhythm is already fast, dude.
But you know how there's like, there are dances that have
that.
So many small movements that it kind of fits with any beat or any rhythm you put to it.
Okay.
this is kind of almost more of like an optical illusion, but with motion, where there are, the good example is the default Warlock dance in Destiny. You can put any piece of music behind it, and it feels like it lines up.
Man, I feel like you dove into that emote way more than I did. That conjure up any imagery.
It kind of like goes with anything. Like, for example, I do a lot of, you know, editing and film stuff, and so like there's always temp tracks, or you put music over something, and the rhythm of editing is usually driven by the actual content. You slap music on it, it's fun to see how it lines up. Sometimes it just lines up great, you know. So that's another example.
I used to do that back in like high school. We would play games and we'd record ourselves doing like dumb stunts in like Battlefield 1942 and stuff. And I would record all this stuff, and then I would basically just take our content and drop it into an editing program, and whatever song I had available, I would just drop it on top and watch the whole thing through. And every once in a while, something would line up. And it would be like this instant kick of inspiration of like, oh, that's like a mood that I should like go after. And then I would edit to that song. And like,
I mean, there's whole urban legends all based around this, with the Pink Floyd and Wizard of Oz.
Sure. And not even to mention something like Baby Driver and the music video it was based on, or inspired by, I guess, the same director, where that's kind of the whole idea, right? Is taking the idea of soundtrack as choreography.
Yeah, they do it in good movies too.
Well, you don't like Baby Driver. I don't think Baby Driver's that good, but it's not bad.
I like Baby Driver a lot, and I have the soundtrack on vinyl. It's a slam dunk.
I thought it was overhyped, but I liked it overall.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so back to this.
Yeah.
RPMs.
Yeah, I think it's good. What else can we do with this? Like, should there be a race also?
Well, wait, did
like,
Jeff, did you make your point?
So, I mean, the point I was getting at is that maybe there's environmental interaction that your weapons play into along with the combat in the race itself. Because what I'm thinking is there's kind of a progression to a race, right? Like when you start, everybody is stopped. And then there's a period of acceleration in the first like leg of the race. And maybe that's prolonged.
What would that
there's
sound
lots
like
of curves.
With like machine guns being like, pop 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 pop.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like there's kind of a natural rhythm to a race, and then of course, you know, after that initial section where everyone's kind of accelerating, everyone kind of finds the range where they're in like the top two gears and they're playing just inside those around curves and everything else. And so there's kind of this ebb and flow already to a race, and then you're layering this weapon system on top of that plays into it. Like, why not also do some environmental stuff? You know, Forza Horizon does it with some of their bigger like event races. There was also that Disney racing game where it was all about like the environmental set pieces and stuff. So I'm just saying, like,
that's cool.
Work some of that stuff in where, you know, like maybe, you know, 2/3 of the way through the race, like the music track is just banging and like this dam collapses in front of you on the road and you have to like shift into the right gear so you have the right weapon to cut a hole through the dam, and like everybody's kind of doing this at the same time while they're still kind of fighting for position, jockeying for position.
That's an interesting thought. I wasn't really with you until you said like it kind of reminds me of the new season of Fall Guys, where like one of the new levels, like obviously everybody's racing against each other, but they also there's like boxes that you have to move to get over a wall.
Yeah, and
you
just did that one yesterday.
You have to work together to get the boxes. So
it's also like what do you call it, MotorStorm Apocalypse. You ever play that? It's
I didn't play that.
It was a third. It was, I think it was a third MotorStorm game. It was all built around destruction. It was very cool.
The other thing I was thinking is like, there's a lot of like physics things that happen in a car that affects your RPM. Like if you go over a jump and your car isn't like working against anything anymore, your RPMs are gonna like fire up and like you're,
oh shit,
yeah, you
awesome.
Redline immediately.
Yeah, so like there could be like tiny little jumps in the road that if you hit, your car's gonna be like rah, rah, and like that's gonna also like translate
that's
to how fast
cool.
you're firing. And then like another thing that I think is cool is drifting. One of the techniques to drift is like downshifting into a lower gear to like kick up your RPMs really fast, like break the wheels loose. So like you are sort of carrying your momentum a little more around a corner when you're drifting, and also keeping your so like it feels to me like there's a lot of these like ceilings that you can learn, like different
yeah
like strategies
pro strats
yeah
That's super, like, the whole drift thing too, because the other way you can do this is you can redline in first gear and then quickly ramp up to your highest gear, and then you're just kind of like floating as your wheels are just spinning endlessly. That's how I do it in Forza anyway. I don't know if that's real, but like at that point you're drifting, but your RPMs are like completely detached from your speed, kind of like what you were saying.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, if you lay that into the level design of the course, you can get some really interesting things.
I think, Jeff, you touched on this with like different gears having different powers, which is great. I think it reminds me of Carrion, where it's like if you're a small boy, you get little powers like you can, you know, slink through tight spaces. And if you're a big boy, you can, you know, do whatever, tethers and things.
And Carrion was so cool.
It is such an awesome game. They're basically, yeah, I was thinking, what if there's almost like a rock, paper, scissors to the different gears and different abilities?
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, if it, maybe there's on a high gear, you charge up and you can do an EMP blast. But if you're on a low gear, for whatever reason, you can actually like counter that or something like that. So like you see, you guess, like you hear someone charging up, like, oh shit, and you like downshift, and then you're safe from the EMP or something like that.
No, you know? Yeah, no. Another way to think about that is like weapon types in like video games, where, because I was thinking about what Jeff brought up, that idea of like that initial like starting line where everybody's like right clumped next to each other. That seems like an absolute shit show, right? Because because everybody's right next to each other. Everybody's starting in first gear, and they're just going to be like pegging the RPMs immediately, just so they could be firing at like absolute max speed, and nobody's going to actually race. They're just going to try to kill each other. And also, if you're in the pole position, like that lead starting position, you are fucked because everybody behind you is shooting for it. So like maybe first gear is like bullet hose, like shitty, like little submachine gun where it doesn't really do that much damage. It's way better to just like get out of there. And also accuracy is another thing that could factor. Like maybe it's like just firing everywhere.
Oh yeah, exactly.
And then once you get to second gear, that's when you start getting like a little bit better. And then third, maybe that's more like the shotgun class or whatever in like a Doom game, where it's like up close, like powerful. Maybe it's probably not 1-to-1 to your RPMs, right? So like,
oh, you'd have to divert. Yeah, because you'd want to start like with the shotgun, power. Like boom, boom,
yeah,
boom,
yeah.
Up to like that. Was it Terry Crews has an Expendables?
Yeah,
that, auto shotgun. Like, oh man, that's great.
That was one of the best scenes ever. and then if you can get like all the way to your like fifth gear, I guess would be the top, because I mean, maybe different cars have more gears or something. That could be part of it. But like,
that's true. Some are 4-speed, some are 6-speed.
Yeah, and so like that's when you're firing like rockets or whatever. But you have to keep your RPMs really high up in the top gear, which is pretty hard to do unless you're in a straightaway or something. So then you get this almost like Jeff, you're kind of talking about the ebb and flow stuff. Like you're going around corners and stuff, and like that's not really your damage spots. It's when you finally get to the straightaways and you're in top gear and you're just maxed out and it's just like chaos erupting around you, because that's when people have like their grenade launchers and rocket launchers and everything's blowing up around you then.
Yeah, I'm thinking like top of sixth gear, like once you get your RPMs over 5,000, like you activate like an orbital laser from the front of your car and it's just like a straight line of death in front of you.
That's like your
I was gonna say there has to be rear facing weapons. Like you kind of touched on this with like There's no incentive to being first, you know?
So, yeah, maybe you have a little bit of an aiming thing where it's almost like a twin stick racer. Did we inventing a genre where you're steering with your left stick, you have like the triggers as your gas and brake. And then since this is kind of auto firing based on your RPMs, maybe the right stick is like some sort of turret control where you can aim in any direction.
I think this was almost exactly a game for 360, I think.
Well, so I started thinking, okay, I'm getting like, I'm probably being too much of like the car guy for this conversation, but when you go in reverse, your car only has one gear. Yeah, and so,
which I hate in movies when they hit reverse and like get away from things.
Oh, in movies, you mean only Fast and Furious does
that?
Yeah,
where they're going in reverse driving as fast as someone in fifth gear. Yeah.
Fun fact, electric cars don't have that limitation. But like obviously this is like a jokey kind of jokey silly game, and like I think like Fast and Furious logic works well in this. So like what if there is a way to
like spin it around. Like pop your car up in the air like, and do a 180, and now you're traveling in reverse. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe
you just a bootleg spin and then just like pump it in reverse.
Yeah, I just want this really quick like switch of like poof, poof, and now you're in reverse and your RPM is just fucking pegged. But like maybe visibility is not, well, I mean, you definitely can't, either you can't see where you're going or you can't see what you're shooting at. I don't know like what the best.
I like not seeing where you're going, because now, it's I mean, bigger risk, you know, thinking about a first place racer, you're in first, like you hit the flip button, you know, like handbrake button. So we'll do like circle on a PS4 controller or something. You spin around and now you see like three or four people who are right behind you.
Oh my God. That
image, and you just have like a field day on them.
Yeah.
And then like,
if you're first into that straight, and you know it's just a straightaway, and you're like you're in like rocket mode. Maybe going in reverse will carry over whatever the last weapon you had available based on your gearing was.
Interesting.
So like you pop around, all of a sudden the camera turns around, and you see like the whole pack behind you, and maybe like second place is also going to fire behind him because he knows like maybe you can get this little like help each other out thing going on in that short little window. Like short little time frame, but like yeah, you pop around and like everybody's firing forward everything they got, but now you're also firing. Like that just seems like the most awesome climactic chaos thing imaginable for a race.
So you can design the races to end with a straightaway for that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea. This kind of feels like it needs something like the Cars and iRobot, which we were talking about a lot this week because we were geeking out about spherical wheels. but the reason I bring it up is this. Maybe no matter what direction you're looking in, your controls stay the same. So right trigger is always forward on the track and left trigger is always stop. And so when you spin around, like maybe it's just the core of your vehicle that spins around. And so you still have the same gearing. The steering isn't like reverse steering where the wheels in the back are turning.
I mean, look, I know what you're saying.
Like,
but you
so
also
the car
the
always controls
pivot.
The same no matter what direction you're facing is what I'm getting at.
I kind of like, I think, Danish, you're probably getting at this too. I think having almost like, and I don't want to do hovercrafts, but hovercraft style controls where you have momentum in your forward direction and it's about, you can still kind of rotate on an axis. But you're it's all about pushing your own momentum where you want it to go. I think I like that better just in terms of like, again, like skill ceilings and like people getting good at it.
Yeah.
I was saying this. Why would you want to make the gun fixed and the car rotate rather than just having a swivel on the gun?
I just think it's more interesting. I like,
well, I think it's great for the one thing where like you turn around, you can't see where you're going, but I don't know.
Maybe like because minor forward adjustments, but like, again, the person in first place is like fucked most of the time.
Because here's how I'm envisioning this. Like, I like the slight pivot, but maybe it's like headlights, right? Where they're anticipating your turn a little bit. So like there's a little bit of left to right movement, but it's really about your positioning on the track, which I think could play in interestingly to like the idea of racing lines where there is an optimal fast route on any given track based on the turns and curves. And so maybe this is kind of playing against it. So, you know, the player has to balance the idea of positioning and their racing lines with wanting to take out the person ahead of them or wanting to take out the people behind them. And so maybe that's just like part of the push and pull.
Cause if I'm in second place and I really want to get that person in first place, like I could just get kind of behind them and then shoot at them. And if we're on a straightaway, that super sucks for them, because, or even if we're not on a straightaway, honestly, if we're going around a corner, they're super boned if I can shoot wherever I want. Like, and I was thinking like if you're fixed, it forces somebody to be almost like, unless they're like drifting a little bit, to like try to move their car, like, which is also going to slow them down, so there's some like give and take there. Normally they have to get like right behind you in order to like start shooting, which is also like drafting. So like so like that is like a benefit where they're drafting you and they're doing damage to you. So what if there, I was trying to think of like, what if there's a way to like start dropping mines behind yourself a little bit in order to like keep people like off your ass? And I was thinking like maybe like downshifting could drop a mine, or like every shift. So like you're trying to go back and forth between.
Downshifting is interesting because I was thinking like, it's almost like a brake check, right? Like someone's on your ass and you just like tap your brakes real quick.
So you're trying to keep somebody off you, but you're also going to be losing speed by downshifting all the time. Like
that's good.
Something to keep this like risk reward going up. Like somebody, a person can't just sit on your ass and shoot at you because you're kind of screwed. Ooh, or you can do your 180 move. Like,
I mean, even just breaking is good to release something, because then it's like you can feign something and like the guy will break to hit a bomb and you can actually use that to his reduction in speed to overtake him.
I think the downshifting works because maybe when you upshift you get like a very brief shield, and so the only to like a specific weapon type. Like maybe the weapon type you're moving out of, you get a shield for that. So maybe there's a strategy, kind of like when in Mario Kart where you're like you know, tapping the jump button and you're switching left and right to build up your boost really fast. Yeah, yeah. Maybe there's like a down up strategy you can do where you drop a bunch of mines and you make yourself immune to like fourth gear while you're going between fifth and fourth gear. And then like you use that on the straightaways and you're kind of losing speed, but you're also putting up this like really strong defense.
You know what I'm kind of thinking is like, what if this was strictly a two person game, like two person battle mode? Okay. Like two cars who are like really, because it kills the whole like starting line madness scenario, right? Where there's 40 people in a line and whoever's in front just gets shredded. Like
even three might work, but yes, I get what you're saying.
Three might like work. There's something I like about this like one-on-one thing. And I don't know, maybe it's a mode, but what?
Fast and Furious.
Like if there's something about the way the cars work that is really like, it's actually kind of easy to get into first place. Like if you just shift up, you're in first place pretty quick. But it's once you figure out like these like back and forth of like the different damage types and dropping mines and stuff, where it's like, I don't really want to be in first place right now. I kind of want to pull back, and then I want to like get my first place for that straightaway so I can do my 180. And then like around corners, maybe that's where it's like, okay, I'm going to, if it's braking, like e-braking is another way to like go into a drift, and like downshifting is a way to go. So like one of those is like dropping mines, or maybe another one is like doing something else. I don't know. But like I think when you kind of condense it down to this like one-on-one, very mechanics-based racing game, I don't know, that I think there's a lot of potential for like, again, like really high skill ceilings, and like almost like a chess game of like trying to get your positioning correct while also reacting to what the opponent is doing, and kind of removing the chaos of like, you know, 10 other people on the track where it's like, okay, there's just 15 fucking mines in front of me, I'm screwed. But just this one-on-one trying to do head games and like trying to get in front right at the right time and trying to pull back right at the right time.
What if it was one-on-one, but it's also filled with jobbers?
Well, I was gonna say do the Burnout thing. The very first Burnout game I think is a masterpiece, and one of the best parts of that game is there's so much ambient traffic that not only are you navigating the other racers, but you are like navigating a busy city, sometimes like in rush hour. And I think that play is interesting because, again, that plays into the environmental thing where, like, you know, blowing up a bystander car is like classic fare in an action movie, but it could also be strategic. Like, it's essentially a smoke screen, right? Like, you blow up all the cars ahead of you, drive through it, now your opponent behind you can't see you for a second.
You could also just like blow up cars in front of them to put a like what almost like this, like if the car is undamaged, if like the AI car is undamaged, it's like tissue paper. But once it becomes like a wreck that you've destroyed, it's a little more capable of like slowing you down.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We should also interject, every bystander car has like an ejector seat with a parachute.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, no one gets hurt. No one gets hurt.
I want, you know what I want? You know what weapon I want in this game? I want a mine where you drop it, but you can also detonate it as soon as you want. So you can drop the mine and then detonate it at the same time and blast your own car super far forward.
Oh, that's, that's that cool. Kind of interaction is interesting.
Like, Fortress rocket jump your own car.
Right. I was thinking, like, is there a place in this game for loadouts, or would there be like track pickups that replace like your current gear's weapon or something like that? Like, is there room for that kind of customization, or does that break some of the flow of the game?
My hunch is sort of like maybe 80% is the car you choose and 20% is like stuff you pick
some
up,
kind
maybe.
Of power up stuff just to
for a little bit of variety, but I wouldn't want that to be the full thing.
So would different cars have different loadouts then? So like the car you choose,
almost like a hero shooter with cars, where it's like you could get you could get the Mustang that does these sorts of weapons, or you could get like the Honda Civic that does those sorts of weapons, and just really visually distinct
vehicles that also somehow visually show like a Mustang. You think like a muscle car, like it's going to be really like a
yeah, it's like the archetype silhouette thing where you know, the big strong guy is slow but he's powerful.
Yeah, so you can kind of
tiny skinny guy
kind of tell, even if you've never played the game before, you can kind of figure out what you're in for just by like looking at what car you're up against.
I love that, and I like the idea of these cars having personality, not like Pixar's cars, but like, you know,
they could be
like, they could be, but they could also be like, you know, you could have driver personalities and then you could do animated shorts and just basically rip off Overwatch 100% as far as their marketing goes. Because I think, honestly, Overwatch's marketing is the kind of the only draw I have to that game. Like, I've never played it. I don't really want to play it.
Oh, I know.
But
they're
I
like,
love their
look
marketing.
At this amazing story we have outside of the game in movies that you download. Like, okay.
Well, someone should
Someone should make this.
This is incredible. Well, that almost took like the whole episode. I think that's well worth it too. So maybe we got time for one more.
Anybody got shorty?
I got a shorty.
Okay, awesome.
Okay, so mine is kind of like yours in terms of it's a mechanic in search of a larger context.
Okay.
Kind of. So this is inspired by a couple different things. One is I've been playing a lot of, you know, Squadrons, obviously, and it reminded me of the classic dogfighting game Crimson Skies for the OG Xbox.
I never played it, but I remember like tons of people talking about that game.
Mm-hmm.
It was really fun. It was a third-person dogfighting game, and it was just very, very solid. And there wasn't a lot of games like that, so I think people really appreciated it because it was pretty
was
neat.
It just like just dogfighting, like really, like was it was like a 3D almost, like
there were missions, like you were behind the thing and there was different, like it wasn't quite open world, there were missions, but like sometimes it's like, okay, you know, I don't want to say fly through these rings, but like that sort of thing where sometimes it was obstacles.
Was it Star Foxy? Like I'm trying to bosses. Get an idea of like what.
Yes, it was a little Star okay. Foxy, let's say. Yeah. So it was kind of like that, but done in a sort of like, you know, 1940s aesthetic.
Yeah.
Anyway, the reason why I bring that up is that there was a few button combinations that would like do sort of auto moves for you. And essentially like the equivalent of Resident Evil when you hit down in a button and you do like a 180 quick turn. It's like that, but for dogfighting.
Okay.
So
like
there was
a car
game. Different. What's that?
We just had that mechanic in the car game.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this is what I'm about to propose ties pretty closely to that. So like there's one move where you'll do the, like, I think it's called the Immelmann, where you like go up and then spin, like you basically fly up upside down, then you turn over, so like a 180.
Okay.
There's a barrel roll turn, you know, all sorts of different things. Okay, so I had that in my mind. And then the other thing, I was watching recently someone play the Mario 64 remaster, whatever, the fan mod on PC where it's like 4K 60 widescreen. And that was really cool. And I remember like one of the points that they were saying is just how fun it is just to do anything in that game. Just controlling Mario is fun.
Isn't it crazy, you know, like, how they nailed that shit like instantly?
The first time off,
oh my
yeah.
God.
Climbing a tree and vaulting off of it. My favorite thing, I don't know why, but I did it all the time, is when you turn back from the opposite direction you're running
and you
do that sort of slide.
Oh,
and you jump.
Yeah. Yes.
Slide
that
jump.
Like weird cartwheel jump that he does.
Yes, exactly.
It's so cool.
So instead, I got to a point in that game where I would never not do that jump. Every jump I did was that jump. So even if I had to jump up a stair, I would turn back around, slide, and then jump the super high. And it was just fun to me. I just love doing that. Okay, so now is where I put these things together, where I like the idea of these little like combos. I don't know what to call them, like macros or little auto moves, where it's like, if I do this and then this, this thing happens. So whether it's this plane maneuver in Crimson Skies or this cool like cartwheel backflip jump that Mario does. And so what if you added that, you combine that with an endless runner or shooter or something, where the endless runner is not just about like jumping, ducking, or doing whatever endless runners do. It's more about this wide array of acrobatic moves, almost like parkour style, that are activated by specific like button combinations. So almost like a special move in a fighting game.
Interesting.
If I hit down circle, you know, quarter circle right in a button, he'll maybe wall run. If I hit, you know, down, up, something,
so
he'll do a
just
flip.
So I'm clear, are we talking about a flight game, or are we talking about a...
No. I'm talking about a third-person game.
Oh, I got so stuck on Star Fox.
Yeah, I mean, Star Fox perspective, I think, kind of works, because in Star Fox, like, you do have this kind of 2D wall plane where you can go left and right, up and down, but you're going down a track, and almost like the trench run at the end of Star Wars, A New Hope. Where it, like, I can totally see this, and I see the endless runner aspect, but I almost want this to be a shmup where, like, you are like, there's like a bullet hell kind of thing, right? Where there's all this stuff happening, and you're doing these acrobatic moves to get through, like the classic, you know, doing gymnastics through the laser tripwires scene in any movie.
Yes, I think that's actually the best version, is a bullet hell type thing, because there's one more example I want to give. You know, Spelunky and Spelunky 2 has a very specific physics, which took a lot of getting used to for me. And the arc of the like projectiles that you throw have a very specific arc. Mm-hmm. And if you jump and throw it, it goes in like a 45-degree angle up. And so I eventually got decent at it. So if a bat's coming down and I can visualize like an invisible line that's like, okay, he is 45 degrees in front of me and up, I know that if I jump and throw instantly, that rock is going to hit him. So imagine that idea, but in a bullet hell where it's like, okay, I see three guys in a row above me. If I do this button combination, I'm going to do this cool maneuver that's going to like slice through all three of them and end up over here, you know? And so it's a constant like gauging myself in relation to others and carving a path. So in a bullet hell, you do that anyway, visually, and then you have to manually carve the path. What I'm saying is there's these special moves that do it for you, and you have to see the pattern and input that special move and watch it play out and do that over and over again and have it be like a complex thing. Like I said, that can work in a bullet hell. I think that's a pretty good thing. Could work in an Endless Runner. It could work in a Star Fox, you know, shooter. So that's basically the mechanic.
I'm trying to think of like... I am just stuck on a flight sim for some reason, because you started with a flight sim.
Yeah, that's fine.
But yeah, I think it might work pretty cool not as a flight. Like, I'm imagining like a character, almost like a superhero character, who needs to just run in a straight line. Maybe it's Pepsi Man, and they have to get to the end of it. and like, there, you know, bullet hell on a forward runner. And like, if there's, you know, it's exactly what you're saying. If there's, you know, three guys in a diagonal line off to the right, and they are just like hammering you with bullets, there is a button combination where it's like teleport, teleport, teleport to those three guys past all their bullets. Yeah. Like, you get those like kills,
I'm almost seeing this as like a pacifist run kind of thing, where it's just about avoiding and getting past them.
That
could be a take.
I want to murder everything.
Okay. I mean, because this almost feels like Pistol Whip. Like, if you just took exactly Pistol Whip, and instead of the enemies appearing on beat, they were just all there already, and then instead of VR, you were doing this like acrobatic runner through those levels. That's kind of how I'm seeing it in my head, where, you know, you kind of know the bullet trajectories, and you can also bait them a little bit.
Jeff, you just blew my mind with something.
Okay.
Well, but before I get there, I was just going to say that I think it's 2D in my mind is a lot easier, just because I'm thinking of that Spelunky example of like, I can map out my relations to things much easier, not in 3D where depth is an issue.
Because you're not a pro gamer, Danish.
Yeah, because the beautiful thing about that Star Fox perspective, or I think... Not a lot of endless, I guess, yeah, a lot of endless runners like Temple Run on the iPhone and stuff do that behind the back perspective too. Mm-hmm. The great thing about that's
kind of what I was thinking. It's still really on a 2D plane. It's just
but the difference is things like wall running, or like, you know, you can.
I know it offers more. Things,
exactly. Yeah. And so that kind of that height, the verticality of it, to you know, use that term, is, I think, where a lot of this fun stuff gets, because, you know, doing like the wall run, or like doing a skip off a wall to get like high up. Like, if you do a skip off the right wall, you get really high up on the left side, so you can get up into like a balcony section or something. Like, those interactions, I think, are really fun.
So the reason why I'm not super sold on the 2D idea. All right, Danish, when you say 2D, do you mean like top down 2D, or more like Spelunky side scroller 2D?
Well, either, because just like it removes one axis, and which makes it easier.
So I guess my issue with that is just like it kind of turns into like Super Meat Boy with combos, which isn't that exciting to me. So. I guess. I think there's
maybe
something a little more exciting by having it 3D, and like Jeff said, verticality. Like if you combine these, like combos, probably not the right word, but these like special moves with wall running
they're
and
just,
wall jumping.
They're like classic special moves that you would have in anything where
fighting games.
Yeah.
And the trick from like a design perspective is just setting up these visual cues that sort of say like you need to wall run here, and then you need to jump off to the right, and then you need to teleport to those three guys, and then you need to do the, you know, like I don't know how we could communicate that sort of thing through our podcast vocally, but
one thing that I was thinking about is if you set this up as a runner or Star Fox like set levels, it does limit things because there's only one way to do it. And it's more like memorizing the order.
I think that's the ideal way to do it. Like there is a perfect run baked in there,
like the speed run kind of.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking like, what if it was open, more open world, like a open, flight shooter or whatever, dogfighting type game where you have to set up the combo. So like you see, man, I don't know how to picture this with a flight game. But anyway, let's say there's these three.
Let's
enemies
not do flight
that you,
game
because like,
I haven't been doing flight game for a while now.
There's three enemies lined up. One of them is offset. So if you do the combo now, you're going to hit two of them, but not the third one. So maybe it's better to like swing around, shoot that one to get it into position. So you'd line up them all three, and then you know you can circle back and do this cool combo. That sounds more laborious than it should be.
Here's the thing about that is the doubling back. We talked about this with
back,
like
but.
the idea of like the Sonic game and how Rayman Legends is the perfect Sonic game because of the momentum and the flow of it over, you know, another game. And I think for this, because it's all special moves, you know, and again, like I'm a little stuck on this, but the idea of like Spider-Man. Spider-Man's the perfect example because he's kind of already doing this with like the wall running, the web slinging. And then if you go into the movies, he also has these cool moves where he'll do like the spin in air where his body's horizontal to like dodge three shurikens or something. Like those kinds of moves I think are cool, and there's something about the tactile quality where you can almost feel it.
I want to circle back and say that I don't want it to circle back. think of it this way. I have a gun that when I shoot someone with it, all they do is they like jerk to the left. And I have another gun that when I shoot someone with it, they jerk to the right.
I was thinking about that too.
And so it's almost like Tetris.
But it's like
Tetris
it's
attack.
It's like a puzzler, and that's getting away from the excitement I have.
I think
there is
a
game
layer
there,
of that.
But I don't know if it's the same game.
I think that it can work. It's like, we kind of mentioned it earlier, Into the Breach is exactly this, but as a strategy game. So imagine Into the Breach, the action game, where I'm lining up things for these cool, elaborate combos. I think there's a way to sprinkle that in without it taking over the whole game, and you still have it be like an exciting action game.
Perhaps. Yeah. I think that's you know where our show ends and prototyping begins.
Yeah, guys. Someone should make this.
No, hold on. Stop the fucking presses. Here's the thing.
Record scratch.
Here's a screw part. That's not
that's what records sound like.
Matt's never heard record.
What's a record?
Ironically, he's probably the only one of us has a record.
So here's the thing. If I'm a listener listening to this episode right now, I am not even sure if we're talking about a fucking flight sim or a dude running down the street or Pepsi Man or Spelunker.
That's true.
Yeah. We have not landed on a single solid idea for this entire pitch. We need something right. more than
I mean,
this.
So let me put this out. And again, I know I'm stuck on it, but I feel like it's just the best. Like, a guy or a person running through a linear level with like set enemy placement, it with like a repertoire of acrobatic moves that they can use to navigate this level, you know, constantly moving forward. In my mind, you could do multiple people. Like, you have the kind of like ninja character who's doing like really cool flips and spins through the air. You have the Jean-Claude Van Damme character who's like doing crazy splits, and it's more about like their body placement, like that one Japanese game show where you have to like fit your body into the missing piece.
Yeah. I don't want multiple characters.
You don't want multiple. No, in my mind, that's kind of where it was.
Oh,
where
I
want
to drill down. It's almost on like a moveset that the player has to master.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got an idea that's almost like a mix between the two. And it's going back to my combo setup thing, which I also am a little bit stuck on. There was a game for GameCube called Time Splitters Future Perfect, and I'm sure we talked about this before, mm-hmm. where you're playing through a level, and you have like support coming from the side, like a sniper far away, and he's like picking people off, and you're going through the level. And then it turns out that was you, because you go back in time and you play the level again, and now you're the sniper, and it's pretty cool. What if there was something like that where you do the run twice? The first time...
You've just added another game that we don't know the mechanics to on top of the first game we don't know the mechanics.
Well, I'm explaining what the end result is. The end result is you run through this level, Star Fox style. You're a guy. You're a person running through.
You're a lady. You're a Pepsi woman.
Yes, Pepsi woman. And you're in this lane, this like hallway, whatever. You are setting up people to be comboed. So you're hitting them, you're punching them, you're doing stuff. You still got your cool special moves, but you're just stunning them all. Then at the end, you go back in time.
The fact that we just have to not kill people because Jeff said he didn't want to. No,
like, I mean, I mean, that was just one idea I had. But no, I hear what you're saying, where the first character is like disabling and stunning, and then you're going to say the second character comes through and just kills them all.
Obliterating them. Yes, exactly.
That's good. That's good.
So you're going through and you're disabling kind of like Mirror's Edge style, right? Where you're parkouring through this level, stunning everybody, trying to get them like kind of lined up where, it, you know, in Mirror's Edge, you can push people to the right or to the left into the environment and stuff. So you're just like corralling them all into the center of this hallway. And then your second character comes through with like spinning saw blades on each hand. And they're just like doing cartwheels down the middle of this hallway.
Pepsi woman and saw blade man.
Okay. I think that satisfies more of our hanging questions.
I mean, that's definitely something tangible that's closed off.
Yeah, sure. Remember, guys, we also pitched the cool racing game in this episode, so it wasn't a total bust.
Yeah, this is supposed to be a small one.
Now, a long time ago, I said Jeff blew my mind with something, so I wanted to say that really quick. This might also be a good idea. Pistol Whip, except instead of shooting at the guys, you have to... It's still music-based, but imagine Pistol Whip as like a Dance Central-style game where you have to strike poses, and that makes you teleport to guys to incapacitate them. And so like the whole time, you're just like striking like ninja poses to teleport in different directions and do different moves to guys. That's a good fucking game.
Someone should mod that.
Someone should mod that.
Yeah. Yep.
I would love, like... I know Pistol Whip, the whole thing is pistols and pistol whipping, but... There's a lot of room in that game. There's a lot of room.
I think they're going to add... Well, let's start there on our after show, because I think Danish is dying to end this one.
Yeah. Yes, I think that is a good place to end it. Let's have some recos for our listeners. Who wants to go first?
I got a couple short ones.
Jeff will go.
Sure.
Yeah, these are...
No, wait, no. Here's a thing we do every week. Danish goes last, and then he has to awkwardly also then transition into the okay. outro. So I think Danish should never go last anymore.
Okay. So I mentioned this last week. I think it probably was in the after party. Was this movie called One Cut of the Dead, which is cool. Now that was part of this service Shudder, which I added to my Amazon channels thing, and. I have actually been watching a decent amount of stuff on that channel, and a lot of it has been pretty good. And one movie I saw, which I could not recommend higher, it's maybe one of my favorite movies this year. It's a Shudder original, which, you know, it sounds so weird because it's like, well, who the fuck are these guys and how do they know how to make good movies? But their track record seems pretty good. The premise of this movie, Scare Me, is two people are out in this sort of like log cabin. It's like a getaway sort of thing. In neighboring log cabins, these two people, and it turns out they're both authors. And so the power goes out and they kind of just like get together and spend the night kind of like just by the fire, bored because there's no electricity and they can't do whatever. And so they decide, hey, why don't we just tell ghost stories or tell scary stories to each other and let's try to scare each other. The whole movie is two people in a log cabin telling stories to each other. That's it.
Oh, it doesn't like cut to dialogue. It doesn't cut to like in universe?
No, it doesn't cut to them reenacting it or anything.
That's cool.
It's so fucking good. And what they do with it and where they take it and the kind of, not twists and turns, but like the way it evolves and what happens in the ending. Like, I was just so impressed by this movie. It's incredibly good. So I would recommend everybody get the Shudder free trial for 7 days. Costs you nothing. Watch this movie. Watch Scare Me. And then also, you could watch One Cut of the Dead, which is also pretty cool. But definitely this movie, Scare Me, is one of my favorites I've seen. So that's it.
Yeah, I'm digging that premise a lot.
Jeff, you're up.
Yeah, okay. So these are recommendations in the truest, most basic sense. Flu shots. We just got our flu shots yesterday for this year, and I highly recommend getting flu shots. A lot of places will give them to you for free. Like, we went to Walgreens, we didn't have to pay a cent. So definitely get your flu shots, take care of yourselves, stay healthy. Also, this one's more specific to Texas, but it's also just going to be a general voting thing. But early voting starts in Texas this week. So any of you listeners in Texas, you can start voting this week on the 13th.
Very cool.
My reco is Elmo.
Please say more.
So on HBO Max, there is a show called The Not Too Late Show with Elmo. And it is obviously a small children's show. But like, it just reminded me of how much effort and skill goes into like turning this weird little puppet thing into a living, breathing character. I don't know. I'm like always impressed watching that show because like his facial expression, like you immediately buy that he's a living thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like Yoda. Yeah. You know? It's the art of the puppetry is amazing.
It's so amazing. And like, it's like I said, it is obviously a kid's show. It's not like you're going to get anything out of this, but like,
well, I guess I was going to ask, like, you know, I've on the show recommended Bluey, which is a kid's show, but it's so well written. It's so funny that I legitimately enjoy it as much as my kids.
Yeah, I mean, there's
Are
jokes.
You getting enjoyment out of it in terms of the writing?
There's like clever jokes and stuff and like funny, like definitely jokes that kids wouldn't get. And obviously not like adult humor by any means, but like, just like things that are a little too clever to be appreciated by a kid, you know, like kind of surprising in some ways where you're like, oh, that's definitely not a joke for a kid.
So like kind of the Pixar form.
Yeah, definitely that. And it's something easy to have on, especially when, I don't know, if you're stressed about something and you want something that is never going to remind you of anything bad in the world, you can turn on Elmo and you can appreciate it for the performances or whatever, or just like remember how rad it was to be a kid watching Sesame Street and hoping Elmo showed up because he was my favorite.
Love it.
That's
great.
It's great. You know, while you're on HBO Max watching Elmo's Not Too Late show, something more reality-based and I've talked about it before, for fans of, like, Great British Bake Off, is the Great Powdery Throwdown is just easy watching on HBO Max.
The Great Powdery Throwdown?
Pottery.
That's what I
Pottery.
Heard.
Oh.
Great Powdery Throwdown. Like,
what the fuck is
no,
that?
No, it's like, all about doing Coke, so every week they just do different Coke.
I was going for powdered sugar, but okay. That's awesome. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Someone Should Make This. Thanks for listening. You can always tweet it at Make This Podcast, and it would help us out if you gave us a rating on iTunes.
We also have a Twitch and a YouTube and a Reddit, and all those things are called Someone Should Make This, so type in those words and you'll get stuff. If you have any comments, a game idea of your own, or think one of our ideas already exists, you can email us at someoneshouldmakethispodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you to Mariachi Entertainment System for letting us use their music for our theme song. You can hear more of their music at mariachimes.com.
Until next week, we've done the hard part.
Someone should make it. So the one thing I remember was Pistol Whip.
Yes.
There was something before that, too, that we wanted. Shit.
The blowing your mind thing? Or was
It was I can't fucking play 15 lifestyle games.
Oh, yeah. Maybe there's not that big of a conversation. But, like, I do find myself...
It's like, yeah, no.
I do find myself, like,
I can only like it's a like when it's a lifestyle game. Like this is a this is a game.
That's an accurate description.
It is one. Like, because you have one life.
Why are so many companies trying to compete for that thing? Like, it just doesn't make like it doesn't make sense.
You know, before it was called a lifestyle game, before it was the model of like microtransaction stuff, it was paid MMOs. It was exactly the same thing before that, and everyone tried to be the WoW killer. And it's like, well, I'm not going to pay for multiple MMO subscriptions. And then eventually that went to like more of a free-to-play model and stuff. But yeah, everyone wants to be the one. Because I guess if you are the one, you are going to be very successful and you're going to make lots of money and everything.
Yeah, but like...
And everybody wants to chase
Speaking of the one, imagine Jet Li's the one. And it's after the movie ends and he's just kicked everybody's ass and he's standing at top of that weird pyramid on the prison planet.
He starts crying.
No.
Because Ozymandias, he has no more worlds to conquer.
And he's conquered so many shitty little people that... Like he has all their weapons. He's up there with like machine guns and like he's battled through hell and made it to the top. That's like Destiny or one of like what other like possible game could be up there right now. Like that they're up there. And then you have like this like new guy called Avengers who's like, you know what? I'm gonna fucking run up there with my Switchblade. And like, what do you? Why? I just don't get what's in it for companies to try this. Like, and like here's the thing. It's not like it's easy for Destiny or like I know by saying Destiny there's probably people who are gonna be like fuck Destiny, that's not the one, and this is the one I play, and that's fine. That's
but
not,
I mean there are a million like, that's Warframe, not my point. WoW, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
and
it doesn't
like
matter.
Like they it has not been an easy client. Yeah, like it probably has destroyed studios and like almost destroyed Bungie. Like they've gone through so much stuff, I'm assuming. I don't have any like info on that.
Well, I mean, and once you're at the top, like
you have to maintain
staying there
it.
Is hard. It's like or Arnold Schwarzenegger in Pumping Iron says like the wolf at the top isn't hungry anymore.
Wait, but that's the opposite of what your point was, because he is hungry.
What I'm saying is it's hard to stay on top, and it's hard to stay hungry. It's hard to
hungry as in like he doesn't it's easy to get like lazy.
Yes,
when you're at the top, and like yeah, and that immediately, like yeah, it immediately turns on you. Like you have to keep. You have to keep that hunger up and like keep innovating that space. Like, and it's also sets like weird, like expectations on games where like we're at this weird point where like anytime a game comes out, people just expect it to be a live game in a lot of ways. Like, like Avengers, like I think Avengers, if they had just made a kick ass single player game, I think it would have been awesome. And it got so bogged down with this live game stuff. It's,
you know, that reminds me of something I wanted to talk about is, an alternate reality where they practically didn't change anything about Avengers except pitched it completely as a single player game, and that's a single player thing and that's it. And then the like first DLC or expansion or whatever was when they introduced every live game element, and it's like, hey, guess what? It's a live game now.
There's a game that kind of did that.
Sekiro.
And it's called Ghost of Tsushima. They're
No, they're turning. It's got like a fucking raid and like multiplayer.
Yeah, so the multiplayer mode is there's a 2-player and a 4-player multiplayer mode with a whole bunch of new stuff to like unlock and collect and whatever. And then yeah, there's so supposed to be a raid, which I do not understand how a raid works in the world of Ghost of Tsushima.
I forgot about the. I know they were adding co-op and multiplayer. I forgot about the raid thing. Yeah, that's a good example. Now
that's
imagine if it launched with all that
because
shit.
Because that's a solid-ass single-player game that everybody seems to love. And now you have like those mechanics on top of... like, I don't know. I'm really curious to see if... I'm curious to see if that works out as well as I think it could.
It's kind of like the esports thing. Like, if you pitch a game as esports, you're almost guaranteed to fail as esports. If you pitch a game and just like, hey, this is just fun. We like it. Here, have it.
Hopefully it turns into an esport, but we're not going to say that publicly.
No, you can't say that.
Man, that's the word. Everyone's chasing the MMO, everyone's chasing the live game. There was a time where everyone was chasing the MMO. Everyone's chasing the esport.
Well, it's like the Battle Royale thing. What was that one that like came out super unfinished?
Core Karmkins?
There was
a studio
Amazon one. It was Amazon.
The Amazon one was a more recent one.
You're thinking
one.
Of
there
the
was
Clippy
one,
B one.
Yeah, the Cliffy B one. Yeah, where they're like, we always wanted to be a battle royale, but they actually just like rushed it and got it out in like a month, and it was horrible.
So I guess Cliffy's company kind of committed both sins, where they tried to make Lawbreakers.
Yeah, and they tried to make Overwatch Lawbreakers, and then they tried to do Radical Heights.
Radical Heights. That was the one. Yeah.
And it definitely seemed like somebody was going, "What's popular now? We have to make our version of it. What's popular? We're fucked."
It was a hail. I mean, I think they were kind of upfront that it was a
Radical
Hail
Heights was a Hail Mary. Studio. But
yes,
yeah, but yeah, clearly but
it kind of sucks. I feel really bad for them.
Oh yeah, I don't mean to like shit on that, because like the games are fucking hard, and like you have to support hundreds of people with paychecks.
And success doesn't make any sense in this industry. It really doesn't, because you know, like we're talking about Avengers, and Matt, you absolutely love the first part, the single player campaign.
The first three quarters of the Avengers campaign I thought were phenomenal, and then the last quarter was okay. But overall, I really enjoyed that single player experience.
If they did the Tsushima like model, can you imagine how different it would be? Like people would judge it based on the thing that's there. It would get fucking eights and nines and, you know, whatever.
Yes.
And then everything else is a bonus. Like, no one is going to lower Ghost of Tsushima's score because they didn't like...
Yeah, if this is a complete failure, like, if it just doesn't work for whatever reason, everybody's going, fuck, I still got the game I bought out of it. Like, that, exactly. I didn't buy it for this.
Yeah. It's almost starting with a... This almost sounds bad, but like... Like, you know, the lowest common denominator, like the lowest common denominator should be kick-ass single player game. And then everything else is gravy on top of that. Like if you can nail that.
That depends. Then like, it's not like a single player game. It's easy to make.
No. Obviously not. But what I mean is it's a known quantity. It's attainable. And then like, if you can get an audience with that, then there's room for these other things.
Sure.
I think that's part of it. Also just, this whole way people review games is that it has to be an average or aggregate of every component.
Every aspect of the game is, plus part and D minus part. And it's like, this game gets a C. It's like, but there's a fucking awesome thing in there.
Right. So like, I don't know if this is the right way to do it. Maybe there's problems with this, but like, what if you did rate games on their highest highs?
I think, like, case-by-case basis, Avengers definitely should have been rated as two separate games, I think. Mm-hmm. I think there is an 80% game in there, and there's, like, a 40% game in there. And it's not fair to judge that as one thing.
Yeah. Everything I've read and watched and listened about game criticism is one, it's not criticism in the classical sense. It is a consumer report of whether people should buy something, and there's no common structure to it, and so you get shit like that where it's you have an amazing game that has a couple things with it that just don't work, and it tanks the game.
We don't need to get into this whole discussion, because it's like the whole review idea of how do you review a game, and the whole Consumer Reports thing is still a major factor. I think things are getting better. Like Kotaku no longer has numbers. They have like liked, didn't like, and they have a kind of, their text reviews are usually good. So I think that more people are moving toward that, but then there's still Metacritic. And it's also like other mediums, like no book or movie ever tells you, is it worth the price?
Right.
It's never a cost benefit analysis. It's just, this is what this costs. Books cost this much. Movies cost this much. Let's just focus on that. That's kind of not the case with games, because games are very expensive, but also they don't cost the same.
Well, and it's interactive. I think that's the tricky
and
part.
And they're building, and you're like rebuild, like the analogy someone used is like, a game is like a movie, except you have to reinvent the camera every time you make one.
Yeah. You know, it's
like literally true.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about the interactivity. It seems to be, I mean, it's obviously gaming's biggest strength, but it also, in a lot of ways, seems to be gaming's biggest weakness also, is that, you know, a game can be, like, you could take one game, and it can be amazing, it can be horrible, and a lot of it has to do with what the player brings to it, which is not necessarily fair to the game itself, but it's also just inherent in the nature of it.
Yeah, there's a weird thing of, like, it's like, for some reason, in any given thing, people choose a thing. And, like, like with cars, it's like 0 to 60 time, right? Like,
hello.
Well, Matt just cut out.
Oh, sorry. Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
So,
yeah.
Like I'm always looking at electric car stuff. And you go on the forums and like the whole fucking car could like it's like extremely well built. The interior is amazing. It blasts movies into your face while you're driving. Or like, you know, it's like the most incredible thing. But everybody's like, but what's the 0 to 60 time? And it's like. That is like that for some reason that's the electric car thing, and then you go to games and it's like, yeah, but how long is it? And it's like, this game could fucking suck. Like, why does it matter how long it is? Like, where did that come from? Yeah. I try to trace it back, and I don't know if it goes back to like Zelda 64, where like people played this 70-hour game and it was the same price as some other like 8-hour game, and they just decided because Zelda was 70 hours, by the way, and also phenomenal. And this other game was 4 hours, but probably also shitty. Like, why did the time become the focus on that and not the quality of the game? Like, it's this like this is a new argument that I'm making. I don't know.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
It comes down to,
we don't need to get into it, but
a lot of like classic things, like the quality of the second to second gameplay versus like the, you know, the filler. Longer stuff. Because there was a comparison with one of the superhero games I can't mention. Where we were talking about like the second to second in that versus this other superhero game where like one just navigation was fun and in the other one it like it was a drag going place to place, and it made all the difference because it's almost like enjoyment per second or enjoyment per minute, you know, another PM where
EPM.
Like, how do you rate that? And then I think justifiably that changes the longer you have to do something. Doing something for 3 minutes might feel fun every second of it, but if you have to do that for 20 hours, you're surely going to get bored of it.
It's the Pepsi challenge. that was the whole logic behind the Pepsi challenge, is that the Pepsi challenge was Coke versus Pepsi blind taste test, and Pepsi won. But the reasoning behind it supposedly is that first hit of Pepsi is sweeter, and so it's preferred. But then if you drink the whole can, people prefer Coke. That's the thing I've heard.
I think that's interesting. Maybe from you.
Yeah, maybe.
I've always preferred Coke, and it does have to do with the sweetness, and I never really put it into a single idea like that before. That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys want to talk about something else. I have one more kind of topic kind of related to this about games that are more fun than good. And this is a term that I'm using from Jeff Cannata, kind of coined this term back in the day. And I'm bringing this up because I just listened to this podcast on this Patreon, Dave Chen's Patreon, where he discussed the movie it's called Assassin 33 AD. Have you heard of this movie?
No.
I think I've heard the title, but I don't know anything about it.
Okay, so this is a movie. It is a Christian movie. It is one of those types of movies.
Okay.
Except it is completely bonkers. Because it's about a group of terrorists that travel back in time to assassinate Jesus.
Whoa, that's awesome.
okay.
It kind of is. It kind of
I'm
is.
I'm kind of, but, this sounds like a Preacher subplot.
It does.
But anyway, the there's all sorts of problems with this movie. It's extremely racist. Extremely racist, extremely Islamophobic. It's really, really bad. But anyway, there's a lot of bonkers ideas in this movie. And so this review of it was saying like, you know, this is not a good movie. It's made very badly. It's like, you know, Tommy Wiseau's The Room, but it's just so insane. It's like a singular piece of art. It's like outsider art, you know? And so it's not a good movie, but it's really enjoyable.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like the whole, like, you can like something even if it's not good because you just...
Right, but so the other guy on the podcast pushed back against that. And he said, there's no such thing as ironically good or so bad it's good. If you enjoy it, it's good. That end of story.
I don't agree with that.
And I don't agree with that, but I thought it's kind of interesting. I definitely don't agree with it in a movie, but maybe I agree with it in a game.
I mean, you can say a game's fun. It can still be bad and like broken or like,
right.
And like, we're getting into the whole like, can something be objectively good or, and of course not. Like, it's always going to be an opinion. But like, when somebody says something is so bad it's good, there is value to that statement because you know what they're talking about. You know that you're
right. It's shorthand.
Right. It's a shorthand for like, yeah, it's not Shakespeare. In fact, it's not even Rambo Second Blood, but it's fun. So that is like, you get that. Like that's the value of that phrase.
My take on it is that something being good is, did it achieve what it set out to achieve? And usually movies that are so bad they're good, they do not achieve what they set out to achieve, but they just happen to achieve something else.
Right, it's kind of an accident. So I pitched this, I don't think we released this episode, but Product Number 3, which was one of the Capcom 5 for GameCube, is one of my favorite games, but I will be first to say it is a bad game. Like, almost everything about it is bad, and the reason I like it is because I connected with the vision of the game and the potential of the game, and that was enough to keep me through the entirety of it, even though it's mechanically and structurally very bad.
Yeah.
And I think you can do that with films, especially like the So Bad It's Good, where it's achieving something. Waterworld is another example. Maybe this is just me, but I love the potential of Waterworld. I love the world of Waterworld, but it is not a good movie.
Well, that's an interesting idea, because that kind of breaks my argument that, I guess for you, then, Waterworld achieved what it was trying to achieve. It was trying to make an interesting world.
But that was one thing that it was trying to do. I think it was also attempting to tell a good story.
But I don't know. I think there might be something there for a game. Like, you know, we just recently played Fast and Furious Crossroads.
Mm-hmm. Man, that game ruled.
And we all enjoyed that game.
Yeah.
It's not getting good reviews. I think this is kind of ironic because we're kind of going back on what we were saying before, where it's like, it's kind of not a $60. It's like, it should not be a $60.
No, that game shouldn't be $60. No, we said that before. It should not be $60.
I mean, I think that like literal value judgment is something completely separate.
Yeah, that's the whole package.
It can be separate because for us as Fast fans, we understood the context of the game and we understood what it was trying to capture from the films, and for us a lot of that was successful. The driving mechanics didn't seem that successful based on Matt, like, your second to second commentary on the game.
Arguably, but more importantly, if you were to take that game and make it a 40-hour game, that doesn't make it $60 still, right? It's
not
any value adding metric.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Star Wars Squadrons at $40 and you look at Fast and Furious $60, you think, man, the world has stopped making sense.
Well, yeah. I think Fast has maybe more content, but yeah, no, I know.
But again, like, you know, we were talking earlier, like, is length
moment to moment
what's important. And I think everyone on Earth can agree that a longer game does not inherently make it a better game.
I mean, you're talking to someone who would actively makes it a worse game.
Sure. I mean, like, sometimes. The Witcher 3, I've started playing 3 times. My most recent playthrough is the longest, but I'm never going to finish that game. I wish that was a 12 to 24 hour game, because
I would have
blasted through it.
You can blast through that game in that much time.
That's my take.
I mean, can you?
No. My take is that you don't finish it and it's a 20 hour game. And it's awesome.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, if you avoid side quests in Witcher, I don't think it's that long of a game.
I think that's true.
I don't know.
But
maybe
that goes against the kind of
it's designed
joys.
Yeah,
of
it's
the
designed
game.
For you to go off and do weird
right.
shit.
And so, is that, like, you know, the intention of the game, what the game is trying to do when we're talking about, you know, films, like, are they achieving what they're setting out to do? I think The Witcher is intentionally trying to make the world as interesting as possible.
Yeah.
And that directly conflicts with its gameplay length, or at least it conflicts with my desire for gameplay length, because I want it short, but that goes against the whole premise of the game.
I agree with you, but I'm also surprised to hear you say that, because you are someone who plays games for a long time.
That's true. Yeah. But, you know, it's game day. Like, you know, this is the liking versus something being good thing, where sometimes a game is just fucking made for me, but for whatever reason, I'm just not there for the game. And that's
for sure.
That, you know, obviously, what does the player bring to it?
Yeah. It's another example. We have enough examples, but I prefer Uncharted Lost Legacy to
Last Legs.
Uncharted
4. Uncharted Last Legs.
Last Legs. That's when he's like old Snake style, like just super
he's on his last legs.
smash cut to the title screen.
You might be wondering how I got this old.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else you want to talk about? Or we can.
Jeff mentioned pistol whip and different weapons, and I just wanted to say I believe they are introducing extra weapons in their first paid DLC, that like cyberpunk style thing that they're doing.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's all I know. I don't know any more than that, so that's not a conversation.
What if it was a Fifth Element style like repeater gun, the Z-45, whatever
that,
it's called,
hones
like,
in on stuff, or
where you can shoot in any direction and it just goes.
I want them to remember my idea where you have the rifle peripheral that is the John Wick version of rocking out in Guitar Hero, where you unlock the ability to pull out your machine gun and just decimate the room for like 5 seconds.
Oh yeah,
but
that's
like
cool.
Like man, if they had something like that in Pistol Whip, where because I want to get one of those like rifle attachments, and the way those are set up is they put magnets on your hand trackers, so you can really quickly snap it into that thing and like bring it up to your shoulder. That's so cool. Like if that was like designed as like, okay, you're using the pistol,
awesome.
The left one is probably just stayed in there because in Pistol Whip you only use the right hand,
right?
And then if when you want to pull that up, you just like snap it in there and bring it up, and now you're in rifle mode. Like that doesn't seem that crazy or that like much to ask from the player, and you don't even
you know
need
what
to
else?
Do it, it's optional.
Yeah, another the easy win for Pistol Whip would be to just use that grip button and have you like tap that to throw your gun John Wick style, because like right now you can shoot, you can pistol whip, but you can't throw your gun, and I think that would just be really cool to be able to throw your gun. And there's
like Autica
oh yeah, but it doesn't do anything and, you can just throw your gun.
Yeah, I know, it's a shame.
Why is
it's just,
that
but it's
maybe
fun.
It's a thing later gun. We didn't play it for that long.
We need more boomerang guns.
Boomerang gun, like yeah, it was the God of War axe of guns, like some do something with that. Please.
It was cool as hell. I think I mentioned this to you guys on Slack, but I don't know if you guys saw it or clicked the link, because our Slack or our Discord goes crazy sometimes.
No, it's fine. You for some reason just don't look at it.
Sometimes like if we say something on there and it's just like, oh, like
3 hours later, Danish will repeat it.
I'll post a link and I'll say, have you seen this? And like, no, because it got lost. And then I'll post it again. But anyway, one of them was this one company that solved haptics in VR, which I watched the video and I'm like, this is fucking genius.
I remember when you posted that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. It,
I did not watch it.
There you go.
I watched it.
So I'm going to talk about it.
That was a tested one, right?
It was tested. Yeah. So every kind of, every version of haptics in VR, whether it's like little inflated bubble pads that like inflate and push against your hand, or jets of air or something. There's all sorts of crazy ways they're trying to do haptics on your hands. This method that these new guys did is genius. It's like they use what they call shear force. So imagine you're holding like a marker in your hand and you're making a fist around this marker. And while you're holding it, you try to pull the marker out, like slide it out from your hand. The way that or you can even do it, like put your hand out, your palm up, put one finger on your palm, and then drag your finger across it, like flat on your palm.
Yeah, you're just talking about friction.
Friction is sheer strength. Not like that, Matt. Like all the way across, flat on your palm. Like you're all the way, your whole finger.
I'm doing it. I'm doing it.
Great, great radio. Anyway, so that force, it's technically not accurate. It's like pulling it sideways.
Yeah.
But your brain, it doesn't care. And so when you grab something and suddenly this handle shifts under you, pulling it in one direction.
Okay.
It just feels like force.
I'm calling bullshit on this, because this is the exact same thing as that Epcot ride that I've gone on about that fucked me up, that was in the centrifuge, because...
But that was your brain. He's talking about this is in your hand.
Yeah, but it's still... It's the same thing.
What
it's applying. It's applying a force.
No, this
that is
your
not
equilibrium
the literal force you're supposed to be feeling, but it is adjacent to it, and it's designed to fool your brain.
No, I think those are two different things. Because
one is your inner ear.
Yeah,
because
you were saying that you were in the ride. You're going forward, but the ride itself is only actually going sideways, right?
Right.
So like,
and
yeah,
so
that's your
it,
that's your equilibrium getting.
That's your inner ear. That's like so sensitive.
You know they say.
Than your,
you know they say you get motion sick because your body thinks you've been poisoned and it wants to like eject.
Yes.
Yeah. So like, that. I don't think there's any. Interesting. There's no equivalent to like you're holding something that your body thinks you shouldn't hold. So you get sick.
I don't know.
Well, this is hot.
I don't.
But
know.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean that's a perfect reason. Yeah. So the hot thing, like if you hold something really hot and really cold in your hand, it feels wet. So it's that kind of fooling that you're talking about, Danish, where it's
hot and cold do feel the same for
same
a moment
when they're because when they kill your cells, it feels the same.
Well, yeah, if you get burned by
but that,
either one,
I feel
sure.
like none of this has anything to do with Danish's point.
Yeah, it's I would highly recommend everyone to watch this video. It's so cool, and I just thought it was the genius idea of applying sheer pressure, sideways pressure, on your fingertips or your palm. To simulate it. And you see, like, you know, what's his name? Norman kind of doing this stuff. And he's like, wow, this is, like, you know, the best I've seen. And the reason why that reminded me is, Matt, they also have the attachment stuff you're talking about that, like, magnets on. So they're kind of building that as part of
need more
of
attachments
team,
but, for VR.
Yeah, it's I don't know about just the Oculus has. Controllers, like, how easily you can slide those in and out. And I think, Matt, you and I both have, like, third-party grips on them, which would totally get in the way of these things.
Well, no, this is a... That's the whole thing. This is a third-party grip.
No, no, but what I'm saying is about, like peripherals, attachments, like, quick attach stuff. Like, you wouldn't...
Sure.
You would have to have everything in the same family of peripherals to
there's
going to
be stuff that's mutually exclusive.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that one game Farscape?
Yeah, for the PSVR?
Yeah, that's still like one of the... I borrowed the AIM controller from someone at work. That was still one of the coolest experiences with that gun tucked under your shoulder and like using the analog stick on the back of the gun to move. And then, man, it was
just so
awesome. I
have no clue what you're talking about.
It was a launch title, I think, for PSVR that
Farscape?
I don't think it required it, but it took advantage of a rifle... peripheral for your PS Move controller.
Farscape is a...
Unless I'm mistaken. Not Farscape.
It's not
it was
it's
a...
not Farscape.
It was like Farpoint or something like that.
Farpoint.
Oh,
yes.
No, I... Okay, I misunderstood what you're saying. Yeah, that game was rad. You said you had...
Yeah. I'm just saying how good the AIM controller... Like, even the simple thing like an AIM controller, like, how additive
it's,
it is to
it's so good.
Is
and
the
like,
point I was making.
Oh, Danish just fell down.
I died.
Danish died. the only thing that game was missing was like a stock to put up against your shoulder to like...
Stabilize
it up against your shoulder, but like there was tons of like third party ones that people made or like 3D printed plans that you can download and stuff like that, but like I don't know, there's a bunch of those on Amazon too, but they're all pretty expensive is the only problem.
That seems like a good place to wrap, right?
Yeah, good stuff. Hey, actually, one last thing, Matt, you talked about how your virtual desktop is better than the Oculus.
Oh yeah, it is.
Are you talking, did it make a difference for Squadrons?
Last week I think I ranted and raved about how Squadrons is a great game that doesn't want me to play it. And because of all the weird little bugs that I've run into. So I got the virtual desktop, the one that you have to load through the developer mode. And they've been updating the shit out of that. Like since the last, like we talked about this
That's
like months
awesome.
Ago. And
yeah, with Alex.
It's to the point where I got a wireless adapter for my PCIe slot that plugs right into my motherboard now, just so it's like I don't have to deal with the weird USB stuff because that was like probably the main sticking point before. So I got that plugged in and all set up and everything. And also it uses, the reason why I got it is because it's Wi-Fi 6, which the Oculus Quest 2 is going to utilize. So it should be even better once I get my second Quest. Once it's in there, I set that as the Wi-Fi that the Quest connects to for like downloads and stuff. So my computer basically acts as a hotspot through that. And the computer also still gets internet through my regular wired connection and just passes that to the headset. So once those two things are all hooked up, which takes like no time anymore, like it's such an easy setup now. Once that's set up, I open up the app on my computer and load up the Quest and open up the same app in the Quest and it just automatically connects to it. And I see my desktop in the Quest and I click the game and it loads the game in VR mode. And it's just like done. It's so much faster than using the link cable, which always for some reason will disconnect like once or twice within the first 5 minutes. And then it's like good, but I always have to like anticipate that. And that was also where I was getting those weird tracking issues. I didn't have any of that in virtual desktop.
That's never happened to me, but it does add a whole layer.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't know. There's just I think they're also going to support the 90 hertz screens on the new Quest when that comes out, all through this like third party app.
That's awesome. So my question was like Squadrons. I've heard is the frame rate problems in VR are tied to the link cable. That's what I've
heard.
That
makes sense.
Do you think that's true?
I mean, well, so I never like in, from your experience. I never had explicit frame rate problems. My frame rate always seemed fine. Mm. Like my computer didn't seem to have any trouble keeping the 70 frames a second that the Quest demands. It was strictly that tracking problem that I had.
That cone of vision thing. Yeah.
So yeah, that worked itself. That seems to have worked itself out. That is definitely how I'm going to play that game from now on. I mean, I haven't put a shitload of time into it, so maybe we'll see next week if I decide that it made me motion sick or something. But I don't feel like Squadrons is the type of game that would get me motion sick for that reason. Yeah. There's plenty of different reasons why you might get motion sick, but
try to do like a drift in VR or do some barrel rolls.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just forever disgruntled at my own body's incapability of enjoying VR to the fullest.
Did you play Alex?
Because I feel, I played a lot of Alex. I didn't finish it.
That's crazy. How do you not finish?
But part of the reason was because when my one hard drive died, that had all my VR games installed on it, and so I just never reinstalled it after that.
Finish Alex.
But I mean, I had to go like teleport.
Finished Alex. I mean, my whole point is like maybe you just have to like work up to.
You know what?
I
had.
I mean, wearing glasses definitely helped with part of it, but
it is a real thing. You actually do get your. I mean, you're well past this, but like your VR legs is a thing. A few years ago, I started getting vestibular migraines that made me dizzy in my brain. And one of the exercises my neurologist told me to do is exercise my inner ear. And it's a weird exercise. But he told me to walk down a hallway and constantly turn my head left and right. And it's basically supposed to strengthen my inner ear.
I can totally see that. Yeah.
So I do think that
I might have to try that.
You try that. But I'm also just saying, and this is right around the time like the DK1 came out. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that getting into VR, kind of feeling a little woozy, taking it off, and then feeling better again the next day, putting it back on. Like, I think that also helps
just
my
acclimating.
Sort of,
you,
yeah, I think the acclimation
work out
is a thing,
whatever so. Quote unquote muscle that is.
Yeah, because I have TMJ, which affects both my ears in different ways, and I think that's part of what's my like physical limitations.
I don't know what
to TMJ. I have too much jaw. I have too much juice. I got all the juice. No, it's a jaw condition that causes me. A whole suite of problems in daily life, but that's another conversation.
Someone should make this medical hour.
Yeah, this has gone on way too long at this point.
Yeah let's call
it's,
it here.
The after party's winding down. Everybody's sobering up. It's time to grab our keys and go home.
Yeah,
closing time to go.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. All right, I'm stopping.